Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see. Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Good afternoon and welcome to Peace Talks on Life Conversations Radio. This is your host, Audrey Scott Williams. I'd like to say that I'm excited for this show as I am for every show. Today we get to share our conversation around liberating voices. We've got someone online who we're getting some background noise, so just be careful about muting your phone if you need to. Today we're going to have as my guest Tamara J. Madison and Makua Ray. Tamara is an outstanding writer and performer, spoken word artist. Her literary works have been published in numerous anthologies and magazines, and we're going to be talking about that with Tamara. She is currently an instructor of English at Hudson County Community College in Jersey City, New Jersey, and recently completed a full-length poetry manuscript. I've never seen a poem go 20 pages, and wow, each page is riveting. So we're going to talk to Tamara, and then we're going to talk to Makua and have some cross-dialogue. I'm really interested, being on this walk, you know, one of the major issues that we walk for is giving voice. I feel that one of the great injustices after walking for 12 years around the world across the U.S., one of the greatest injustices that I've found is that often our voices are silent, whether it's from our own internal issues or from government or social causes. And so I really wanted to dedicate a show to liberating voices. And so welcome to Liberating Voices on Peace Talks. Tamara, are you with us?
Yes, I'm there. Can you hear me?
I hear you now. How are you today?
I'm fine, and I apologize. I think that was me causing the static on your line, so I had to hang up and call back. Is it better?
It's much better.
Okay, good.
Well, welcome to the show today.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was so happy we had a chance to talk. I guess it's been a couple of weeks now, and you sharing your work with me. We talked about liberating voices. So let's just, before we get into your work, I wanted to just get a sense of what does liberating voices to me, or, you know, removing the silence in our communities, particularly as it relates to our own healing.
Oh, that's interesting, because when you spoke about it a few minutes ago and you said something about the unexpressed voice, whether it was because of the government or because of our own internal issues, that really struck a chord for me, because I hadn't thought about liberating voices from that perspective, actually, for the show. And I think that that's where it starts. Absolutely, that's where it starts. That place where we are being honest and fearless within ourselves first, to really, really listen and ourselves, and to trust that voice within first. And then from there, I think from there it can probably go anywhere, but that's where it...
Absolutely, that's where it starts. I think we may have a technical issue. We may have lost Tamara for a minute, but she'll call back in, and I certainly agree.
Can you hear me?
I hear you now. You're back.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, good. I was just saying that I feel as you do, that it first requires some internal search and the courage to step out in faith and begin to express on every level.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find your voice in your work, Pam?
You said, how did I find my voice in my work?
Huh? What was your process?
I began writing as a really, really young child. And the reason why, I think, was because it was the safest place for me to put things without getting in trouble, so to speak. You know how you go through that that era, especially as a young teen, where you're starting to hear truths about things happening in the world, and the world is not as ideal and as protected and protective as you thought when you were younger. So my writing actually started as therapy in that kind of way. The places where I was angry or the places where I was hurt, my writing was a safe place to keep that. And then evolving later, I started looking at how to use writing as a safe place for other things, other ideas, other changes that I wanted to make, and ways to grow for myself as well as for the reader and for other people who might be seeing it.
Hmm. Okay, now let's fast forward a bit. And I know I'm kind of pushing us forward pretty fast, but I want to get into Kentucky Curdle. I had an opportunity to sit with the poem, and I have to say, wow, you know, it's an incredible piece of work, Tamara. I want to say that up front, and one that I think will take you many places in terms of your literary talents and what you bring forward through this poem. I said at the opening of the show, you know, I think it's probably the longest single poem I've read, contemporary poem anyway, and every page was riveting. I love the way you gave voice not only to the people, but also to things like butterflies and dirt, and a baby, weed, fence. So what I would like to do is, can you give us a setup for what Kentucky Curdled is all about, and then how you began to develop this piece, and if you want to share some of it through your own reading of it, or you know how however it moves you, I invite you to do that as well. And then I want to have some dialogue about it, because I think it not only is a family story, but I think it is also perhaps a story that runs deep through the African-American community, particularly coming out of the period of slavery and post-slavery here in America.
Wow. Well, first of all, thank you for the comment and the compliment. I really appreciate that on a number of levels. In terms of the setup, many years ago, I believe it was probably, I'm guessing about 15 to 20 years ago, a family member shared a story with me about our ancestral family history. And the story goes that there was a great-great-great-great aunt that was born into slavery. And then right after the slavery period, I'm assuming it was probably the early 1900s, this woman birthed a number of children. And the story goes that she murdered one of the children. And this child was murdered because it was the only one of her children that was born very, very, very dark-skinned like her. All of the other children, from the family tale, it goes that all of the other children were born fairer skin, and this baby was the only one that was born darker skin. And so she chose to take the life as well as give the life of this child. When my aunt shared the story with me, of course, I was shocked. As a very, very young woman hearing stuff like that about my own family, I was shocked. And I asked her, I said, well, auntie, I said, you know, why would she do that? Why? I was dumbfounded. And my aunt's single response was, well, she was evil. She was just evil. She was a nasty woman. And that was it. That was the end of the conversation. And I walked away with that, and my biggest impression was that can't be it. It can't be just that cut and dry. It's not black and white like that. There's got to be some other voices, some other interpretations of this story. And it wasn't that I was trying to excuse anything or make sense of it. I just wanted to see more of the cards laid out on the table. And knowing what I did about African-American history and the stories, because, you know, I was in, I believe I was in middle school when Roots came out and that type of thing. And that was a big thing across the entire country for all ages of people to see Roots at that time. And so, you know, knowing the things that I knew about history in this country at that time, I was like, you know, there's no way in the world that it could just be that black and white. And so I carried this story with me for many, many years. And then much, much later, I felt like I had the tools, both in terms of literary craft as well as in terms of where I was in my own journey of motherhood and humanity or what have you, to begin looking at the story again. And so the first piece that I wrote was actually just to describe what I knew of the tragedy that had taken place. And then I workshopped that one particular poem. And during the workshop, you know, people were fascinated with the story. And someone suggested, they said, you know, a number of people could talk about the same tragedy. So from there, I began to just start to feel out, how does this one tragedy between this mother and this child affect everything and everyone around it? You know, other family members, the other siblings, the father of the child, the undertaker, and then even in the moment of life slash death, in that moment of the killing, what happens? You know, how does the earth respond, the trees? If the sun is looking down on this tragedy, how does the sun feel? What happens to the air in that moment? And everything just started to spin from there, and I started hearing all of these voices and feeling all of these impressions to begin to write. And then after recording those voices and those variations, or what I would call testimony, so to speak, to the tragedy, then I started to look at how they should be laid on the paper, literally, where should the words be placed to be more of a physical representation of what I heard and what I felt artistically. And at a certain point through the process, I had to ask myself why I was doing it and what was going on with me. And so then I began to write a couple of pieces where I had questions, because it wasn't about answering all the questions. It was more about creating as safe and as sacred of a space as I could for everyone to come forward to speak and to testify and to mourn.
That's, I'd like to just interject there. I think that for me, as I've journeyed and watched this process of the unfolding of the silence into voice, I have always been amazed at how important it is. Timing is very important, but creating that safe, sacred space where people, they can step into, you know, whatever that story is or whatever the issue may be, or establishing their identity, which is often a part of a voice. I just wanted to say here that creating this safe and sacred space for the voices to come forward, as you said, is so crucial.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is, you know, the fact that all of the voices could come together and mourn. Because, you know, we can very easily become isolated in our everything, in our joys, in our tragedies, in our triumphs, in our, you know, we can become so isolated in our culture as it stands now. And, you know, throwing up all of our feelings on Facebook is a wonderful thing in one way, but there's a whole other thing that happens when all of those physical energies are physically present in the same space to mourn and to quell an energy and to bring things forth. And that was partly what I wanted to see happen with the pieces. They all needed to come together in the same space to face each other, confront each other, soothe each other, or even fight with each other, you know, if necessary. But that coming together is really, really critical, and something gets lost if that doesn't happen.
Absolutely. I remember when you were first sharing the poem with me in our conversation, you mentioned that you were on your way to lunch and then had a meeting, and then all of a sudden, as this poem was emerging, all these voices started coming to you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was a very new experience for me. It was a very new experience because most of my writing had been along the lines of my own personal therapy and confessionals, you know, from teenage on up to that point. And then, you know, some of the writing would be more of my observations. But in this particular project, I really started hearing voices and characters and things like that I had never heard before. And they were very, very distinct. You know, some of them were argumentative. and confrontational. Some of them were obviously just very, very sorrowful and mourning. Some of the voices were resistant. Some of them were even a little bit playful and humorous, just like at a funeral. You know, there's going to be the family members that sit and laugh and talk and tell jokes about the departed, and then there are going to be other people who just have nothing to say, and they're angry, and they're wondering why everybody else can laugh or eat or what have you. And that's kind of what it was like. That was really what it was like. And it was amazing. And very early in the process, I really felt that I was being entrusted with the project, with these voices, and I felt really honored that I had been chosen and that I had carried this story with me and that I had finally gathered enough of the tools where they could come and sit and share with me and we could lay it all out, so to speak, for other people to share with as well.
Absolutely. Now, let me ask you this. Do we get to hear some of Kentucky Curdled presented by you?
We can. We can. I was trying to figure out what would be the best piece to read. I was thinking, did you have anything in particular that you wanted to hear?
I would just say just whatever speaks to you to bring forward. And what I would do, let me take a, to give you a moment to segue into it, let's take a break. And then
okay.
When we come back, we'll come right into the point. How about that?
Okay. That'll
okay.
be fine.
Let's do that. You're listening to Peace Talks on Life Conversations Radio with Audrey Scott Williams and my guest, Tamara J. Madison, and we're talking about liberating voices. And in this specific instance, we're talking about liberating voices through the artistry of the spoken word, through the artistry of writing literary works. We're going to take a break here. Tony, let's bring our half-hour music up to this time. We're going to play the music. We'll come back in, Tamara, and I'll give you a cue to share some of this with our audience so they really get a feel of what we've been talking about in the poem Kentucky Curdled. Tony?
Peace. The dynamic of harmonizing good. Allow it to flow through your soul because inside it will make you whole. I'm talking about you being you. Because no one else can set you free but you.
I'm putting gas in my car. I'm thinking about the war in Iraq. The air we breathe in is toxic and there's way more than that. The situation's international. Matter of fact, it's intergalactic. But don't make me get into that. Don't see how some be sleeping on the street. While others, they be living a life that's so sweet. I envision a world where everyone's needs will meet. Living off the earth in harmony and peace. The only reason some still be packing heat. Because their lives is so incomplete. We were all born perfect with everything we need to be free. If something happened, man, we stop believing all we could be. Let's remember we're a part of nature. Expressing love is what we're made for. Deep in your heart, the answer's not far. Let's come together now, we play our part. It's all like what you see. And the pain's just too much to believe. Say, I can feel it calling me. I'ma be the change, it's all in me. One world in harmony. One world, one family. I ain't waiting on nobody. Cause I'ma be the change, it's all in me. Hurricanes, tsunamis, wars and famines. Between religions, misunderstandings. Many different people with the same passions. Just disconnected from our cause and our actions. It's time we recognize the law of attraction. And see we receiving exactly what we asking. And I'm focused on lack and limitations. Fear and separation. And I'm open to a new conversation. I'm talking about the love vibration. Everybody wants unification. A change is moving across the nation. Yeah, we choose courage and real communication. It's we know there's no time for wasting. The state of this world is our creation. Let's take a good look around this place. Yo, turn off your TV now, it's time to face this reality. Yo, this is the real show. The human race, we've been so disgraceful. We say we want peace, yet we're so wasteful. Killing all the life on earth to take up space for what? Yeah, we all want the same thing. But more stuff, happiness that won't bring. Yeah, we all know that we get what we're giving. Time's up now, how we gonna live? If you don't like what
open to be real. Are you down? Are you ready? Are you awake? Are you alive? In this very hour, you'll listen and take the vow that will set you free. I know what I'm talking about.
Giving a voice back to the
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Welcome back to Peace Talks on Life Conversations Radio. I'm your host, Audrey Scott Williams, and my special guest today is Tamara J. Madison. And Tamara, why don't we take a moment for Kentucky Curdled?
Thank you. Sister, come running through field. Sister, come running. Feet barely raking weeds. Choke screams in her throat. My lullaby. Sister, come. I drift to other side. Sister, fly, stumble, stop. Look at Rachel, rope me, Rachel again. Sister, hands tremble. Sister, fingers flinch. Sister, loose me. Catch, crumple, body I no longer feel. Sister, wash me. Both our faces with rain. Rachel, walk away. Rachel. Sister, rock me in weeds, rope, fire, burn, sister, hands, body grow cold, dark now, dark, sister, rock, rope, fire, fire, dark, rope, rock, rope, please, rock, sister. He dropped his plump body against me, knocking. Until sister took him down. No tongue to scream, hands to stop, Rachel arms to catch him. I wanted sister, anybody, to take me down with him that day, beat me to muddy pulp. Some come lay flowers, others bring their kin. You see, baby has no marker, no stone. I am his only epigraph.
Wow. I remember reading my first read through the poem, and I was thinking that, you know, this poem is very touching and very deep. And depending on where people are and reading it, it can be quite a jolt to the senses of loss, despair, especially unexplained loss of life or giving of life. And thank you for choosing that particular piece, Tamara.
Thank you. Thank you.
As we come to the end of this half hour, I have a couple of questions that I'd just like to ask. First of all, I want to know, what made you choose that particular piece?
Well, just to be clear so that your audience can be clear, the very, very first piece that you heard was actually the spirit of the baby as it is departing and losing its life into the other side, right there in the midst of the tragedy. And sister is the baby's sibling, older sibling. And then the very, very last voice that you heard, the deeper voice, was the fence speaking, the actual fence speaking, so that way the audience knows. I wasn't quite sure which pieces. It was just... I guess, synchronicity. I wasn't sure which pieces to take, and I was flipping through the book, and I was like, okay, what is going to make the most sense? And I just gravitated to the pieces that I felt would be best in a very, very short space of time.
Mm-hmm. What is your hope for this piece of work now? How does this work? Does it define you where you are in this moment, do you think, in terms of having created such a powerful piece? How many pages is it? About 20 pages?
It's about 20 pages. It's about 20 pages. I guess my hope for the piece is that we can all start to look at tragedies such as these in a more sacred space without judgment as best we can, because that became my priority in the project as an artist and in the telling. As best I could, I wanted all of my own prejudices, my own stuff, as best I could, I tried to keep it out of this and away from this so that the stories and the voices and everything could come through as cleanly as possible, so that the final picture or the fullest picture would be as clean and as clear as possible without a lot of fog, so to speak. And in doing so in a creative arts project like this, it reminds me to do the same thing as best I can in my own life, whether it's my conflicts and struggles within myself, whether it's a conflict or a tragedy with a spouse or another family member or a coworker or just what have you, but to try and look at conflicting moments and tragedies with a purer spirit and a purer soul, I should say, and a purer eye.
Right, right. Well, I think that definitely comes through in this particular work. What I really appreciated about the work is that by giving voices in so many different ways to this tragedy, it became a healing, as I read it, a healing for exactly what you're saying, is that there wasn't any, like, you can't talk about this part of it, or you can't talk about that part, or you can only see it this way. What your gift is through this process is exactly what you say. You told me on the phone you took it from a black and white perspective and put it in multicolor, and you know, sort of a kaleidoscope, if you will, of voices. But in doing so, we get to look at our own lives. You know, I think of those moments in my life where I had to make decisions that could be judged, you know, good or bad or what have you. But you have to make a choice, or you filled an internal, you know, this internal call to make a choice, and then you have to live with it. And so, mm-hmm. you took me through that process on different levels. And I think people who have an opportunity to read this poem will be able to do that. I think it can be a tool for great healing. How can people get access to Kentucky Curdled? Is there a particular website? I know now that some of the magazines and journals are starting to approach you about publishing, and some have already published parts of this. So are there a couple of websites where our audience who may want to read this in full can go to?
There is a website that has published 5 of the 20 pages, and it's www.aduna, and it's A-D as in dog, U-N as in Nancy, A.org. Aduna is an amazing literary arts website that does visual arts and photography. They do everything from poetry to fiction to nonfiction pieces. And they are really, really looking for artists that push the bar. And not just push the bar literarily and in craft, but push the bar in terms of spirit and some of the things that need to come forth on the planet right now. So they're an amazing website. So some of the pieces of Kentucky Curdled appear there in the first issue. As far as print, there's a magazine that will be coming out in the fall called And/Or Magazine. And they'll actually be putting out 10 pages of the poem in print in their later fall issue. Other than that, the full piece, the full 20 pages of the poem is called A Poetic Sequence. It's actually in my manuscript, which has not been published as of yet, but it's in a fuller, larger manuscript, and it's the centerpiece. And I was thinking about your question some more in terms of what it is that I want for this piece. I think the thing that I would like for this piece to encourage for people, we have this thing of choosing sides so very often, just like the black and white. And I think with my doing this project, I had to choose the whole of it. And as a result of choosing and embracing the whole thing, as opposed to one side or the other, it became an amazing blessing to me and to my life, as well as to all of the parties involved and my ancestry. And I think that's the thing that we have to be mindful of on the planet right now. Instead of choosing one side or one country or one point of view, we have to do a much, much better job at looking at how do we embrace the whole and include everybody and everything in its proper place. And that's, I think, the larger picture and feel of the project for me.
I couldn't have said it better, and I really want to thank you for being on Peace Talks today. I don't know how your schedule is. I know you're a busy lady, but if you can hold on to the, listen in for a moment. I'm going to bring Makua Ray on, and maybe we could do a little cross dialogue if you have the time.
I would love that. I haven't seen Makua in a long time. That would be a treat.
Well, wonderful. Makua, are you online?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Well, welcome to Peace Talks. You're usually on the board helping out there. And I couldn't do a show on Liberating Voices without bringing you on as you use your musical gifts and your spiritual mission to create music that is truly, as you say, otherworld soul. So welcome today as my guest. As we talk
about you. Thank you. It's good to be here in such great company, Sister Tamara.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm fantastic. Okay. I've really enjoyed just listening and receiving the background of this amazing piece that you've done. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Uh-huh.
And very necessary, so thank you.
Well, you know, Makua, I wanna open up with you in the same way I did with Tamara. The subject of today is liberating voices and finding that stream through the work that Tamara's done, through the work that you do. What does that mean to you, liberating voices, and especially in the context of a movement on the planet now for the lifting of the consciousness of humanity? And a very important part of that is giving voices that have been silent too long.
Yes. Well, to me, liberating voices, for some reason I've been contemplating this since we talked about the show theme earlier this week, and the first thing that came to mind, and what continues to come to mind, is the idea of freedom of expression as being such a cornerstone to the attempt in the United States to create that ideology, that ideal that, you know, was attempted. And though we know, obviously, in its effort, it was very short-sighted and has many areas through which it still needs to grow and evolve, and yet there's something really profound about the fact that that's such a cornerstone, the freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in that, it's just indicating the essential human need to be allowed or to have a venue through which the stories can be told, the voices can be heard. Now, that may not have been necessarily the thinking or the reasoning behind that, although I would imagine that when the founders of this particular nation were attempting to get out from under the thumb of their own suppression, however that was manifested, that was important enough for them to really include at the beginning. And the same need is a universal need that still exists. So that is essentially the first thing that comes to mind. And in the course of the dialogue with Tamara today, other things have been presenting themselves in my mind as well as it relates to just the idea of liberating voices. And I'll say in as much as that sometimes those of us yet still here on this earth plane are used. We are tapped by those who, for whatever reason, were never allowed to tell their story. And so as writers, as artisans, sometimes because we are sensitive and attuned to receptivity, we make some of the best or most efficient vehicles to tell stories that are not always the stories that, you know, everybody wants to hear. Although, as we allow the story to be expressed, we do find ourselves in it. We see how there's a reflection. And I think that that's also a powerful thing of liberating voices, because as Tamara shares her story, as I share the stories given to me to share with people, that it does affect them, even in as much of a sentence. There's a word or a sentence or a phrase or the way something is expressed that can essentially dislodge a blockage, you know? Or as we recognize that there is so much judgment when it comes to expression, that people censor themselves, you know, to avoid their perception in terms of how they perceive they're going to be received or not. You know, so a lot of times we'll suppress ourselves. We'll put ourselves into the bondage of silence. And so it's very important for artisans to serve that role of giving birth to expression for those that may not necessarily feel as capable to do so.
Right. I was recently out. I was recently on the Oneida Nation with my dear friend and family there, the Neenams and Paulus, grandmother Dorothy, who you had an opportunity to meet at one of the Beyond the Global Divide gatherings. I think you as well, Tamara.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tamara was there too. That's right. The first one.
That's right. And she is, and her members of her family and others have formed together to create a new defense for Leonard Peltier. And when I was there, you know, I was looking at his incredible paintings, and what really touched me was his voice coming through here. He's been incarcerated now nearly 36 years and serving two life sentences, and yet through this incredible artwork that he's doing and how he uses color and his imagery, his voice is being heard. And so as we're talking today, I wanted, you know, we're looking at the literary arts, your music, and I wanted to throw in as well the visual arts. One of the beliefs that I've had all my life, adult life anyway, is that the arts are so important because it's one of the few places where we can really speak truth. And I wanted to just get a comment from you, Makua, and Tamara, if you're still online as well, just a comment or how that, your response to the truth found in the arts.
Yeah, well, for me, it's just the recognition that the artistic medium does, or the various artistic mediums, be it dance or visual arts, you know, it does allow for a greater expression. Sometimes words get in the way. Sometimes words don't adequately communicate what we may intend to speak or get across because of the limitation that sometimes can happen with language. So other mediums, such as visual arts, do provide a safe space for that expression, which of itself is a therapy. It's a necessary therapy in terms of the release and the ability to reflect upon a thing. So if I have this energy inside of me, it's important that I do find an avenue through which to express it, so not only can it be expressed, but also reflected upon.
Right.
So that's...
How would you respond to that as well? The And when I say the arts, I'm talking about the full spectrum, but the importance of art as a way for the telling of truths that may not be available to people in other venues. How would you respond to that?
I absolutely agree with McCoy, and it's funny for me, you know, to agree with him because I'm a poet and I work with words, which can so often be limiting and distorting, right, of something. And that's the other word that came up for me. He was talking about how words can limit something, and I agree. And I also think that words can also distort something and be very, very harmful. But when you're using words or paint or tones or sound or movement, and you're lifting them into high ceremony. One of my instructors that I had when I was doing a master's program, I will never forget, that's what she said. She said, poetry is supposed to be taking words and lifting them into high ceremony, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what high ceremony is to me is when you begin to reach into all of the multi dimensions of something and you start bringing forth the nuances that a simple word or a simple conversation or essay won't bring forth. And, you know, when we're talking about truth, there can be so many folds and nooks and crannies and corners and perspectives that go into that truth, as opposed to getting just a sliver of it and a bunch of other stuff. And I think that that's absolutely what art does. I think art taps into those nuances and brings it forth into a space that taps into our infinite being and going all the way back to that place of nothingness, where we all come from. And the first person that I thought of when McCoy started speaking was Marvin Gaye.
Mm.
Marvin Gaye had a way of talking about and saying things that would just, he would talk about war and he would talk about tragedies and just all kinds of hard knock times, and everybody was grooving to it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he found a way to take this incredibly bitter pill, but the way that he brought it forth, everyone could swallow it, so to speak. And I think that that's what art does. Art doesn't make it easy, but I think art can take some of the harshest and the rawest things and present them in a form that touches that part of us where we really are all-inclusive somewhere.
Right. You know, as you were talking and I was thinking about you, McCoy, I was thinking of your song, If the Ocean Had a Voice. Am I saying the title?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. You know, I was feeling
wow.
That.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's actually, Marvin Gaye's name was mentioned, I just, you know, wanted to also acknowledge another great musical orator in our brother and elder, Gil Scott Heron. As we look at the difficulty of expressing difficult themes, and let's just be honest, sometimes there's a burden that comes with being one who has been, selected, let's say, to express such things. I mean, we look at the life of Marvin Gaye. As easier as he made it, as more accessible as he made it for us, the population, to receive deeper insights and make sense to some degree, or at least pose the questions, it also becomes obvious that, you know, we have to, as artists, we have to really grapple with the weight of the responsibility of such a task, you
mm-hmm.
know, and find that balanced place within ourselves to be able to contain and deliver the story, because it's not just our story in some of these cases. For example, I don't feel that Gil Scott-Heron was only expressing his own troubles, though much of his own challenges, his own demons, were being expressed and the attempt of expelling them through his art. But he, a lot like Marvin, a lot like many artists, was carrying a weight far greater than just his own, you know. And oftentimes that can be the case. And with that song, If the Ocean Had a Voice, for example, that song still resonates with me the way it has when it first was given to me to share. And, you know, along with that, you do begin to recognize the responsibility, you know, of carrying the task of expressing a story that does help to liberate those who may not be incarnate to give voice the same way. And being that there's really only one of us here, some of those challenges then do become the responsibility of those of us who are here. And so as we are experiencing and acknowledging the passing of Gil Scott-Heron, I recognize that, you know, hopefully the now generation and those yet to come can fill in the spaces and places, because he was certainly one of those who was using the gift of expression to share some challenging themes, for sure.
Absolutely.
But it had to be said.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel that it's such a gift to have both of you, Tamara and McCool, on the show today, because, you know, we have a lot of young people out there that are working to find their voice in not only in the artistic realm, but in other realms. And what I hear in the gift of this show, I believe, is the opportunity for a glimpse into the bearer of the word or the bearer of the music or, you know, and when I say that, I mean, you know, I think of an artist as a, if you think of it as a water bearer, right? And it's interesting because we're in the time of Aquarius, whether it's water or milk, nevertheless, we're in the time of the water bearer. And as you're pouring out your words, you are both expressing one that a truth has many sides. There's no single way to look at it. It's not black and white. It's multicolored. And on the other hand, that with everything we do, there is a sort of gift of the burden of being the artist. And I don't use burden as a bad sense. I should say gift of being the bearer of the art. Or the burden of being the bearer of the art, that it comes in both ways. And as someone that gives expression or gives voice to those things sometimes that, others may not be ready to hear, or some are, but nevertheless, it is the moment that you're also a living entity that lives with the consequences of that.
There's a song that Marvin Gaye recorded, and the words are, "The artist pays the price, so you won't have to pay."
Mm.
If only we would listen to what they have to say. Do you remember that one, McCool?
I do.
Yeah.
Wow. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, there's some truth to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you sure you want to be an artist?
But you know what, though? I have to say, though, at this given time on the planet where, you know, as we've discussed, there's the rushing in of the new age, there's all of this fierce transition that is taking place, everything's speeding up, the tilting on the axis, all of that, right? And there's been this continual conversation for a few decades now about how the old will no longer continue to work, whatever it is. So what that actually means is that all of us have to become more creative.
Yes.
Period. And so all of us have to find the artist in all of us. I don't care whether you're working in physics, whether you're working in the kitchen, whether you're raising children, whether you're trying to have a long-term relationship with a partner or whatever it is. We are all being pushed to be creative in ways that we never dreamed we would be, period, to really, really, really start co-creating for real.
No, you're absolutely right. We are the authors of the new paradigm. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get it by looking at what we did and trying to do that better. We're going to get it, as you say, delving into that creative space and tapping source in a much deeper way that allows that release. And that's critical to the time that we're in. As you said, Tamara, systems are breaking down all over the place. It's not evidence in our systems and governments and so forth. It's also evidence in nature. Mother Nature is telling her own story, you know, and so you're so right. And thank you for bringing our show as we're coming to the top of the hour on this Friday, bringing us right back into center. And that is the importance of liberating our voices, because in each person that is listening today, is an answer. I'm not saying the answer, but an answer. And as we create this web of relationship and relating our voices, our art, our gifts, our talents in this tapestry, we do, in fact, create what is to come. And that is the gift. That is the gift of the ages. And I just don't see it any other way.
Well, that's that.
Well,
couldn't have said it better myself.
I just want to say thank you to both of you for being on the show today. I think this is a theme we can, you know, perhaps periodically explore, because I think it's important to generations. Those of us that are here, those of us who are coming back again, to help help us through the shift. So I look forward to being able to reach out to both of you and have you back on the show in the future. I wish you both great success with all the work that you're doing. And Makua, you want to let people know how they can view more of your work and listen to some of the music that you're creating, your other world soul?
Yes, absolutely. Online, the website is www.reverbnation.com /MIKUAKRAI. So that's reverbnation.com/Makua Ray. And there are some musical samples up there. And I'm working on a new album, in fact, right now, entitled Dolphin, that I'm anticipating will be ready for people to actually receive by the beginning of the natural time new year, which is July 26th.
Well, great. Thank you both for being with us today on Peace Talks on Life Conversations Radio. The 13 Moon Walk for Peace is continuing. We're actually in Indiana, outside of Gary, in Michigan City, making our way to Lansing, Detroit, and on across to the East Coast in New York, and making our way back to Atlanta by 11:11:11. And as we walk through Atlanta, it is our dream to have people from all over the country, all four directions, walking in with us strong and in solidarity. That's our vision, and we're sticking with it all the way. Thank you to all of those that helped keep us out here on the road, and I'd like to lift up the team, the core team, Mary, Dave, Karen, my mom, Natalie, and Baba Ogigi, for continuing to believe in the dream and making it happen one step at a time.
So in peace and love, and we will see you next Friday at 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or daylight time, and adjust yourself wherever you are in the world to that time. We look forward to our next show next Friday. Peace. Have a great week.